I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Rambles Guide 2. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Russell.
And I'm Vidushan Hantaraja.
There are great managers, and then there are Pep Guardiola.
It's impossible to play good football if you don't make sex with your partner. It's impossible.
And Jose Mourinho.
It's amazing that this one gentleman in the last row sleeping like an angel.
Yes, there are trophies, don't worry. Jose has a tattoo to remind you of it. But these two managers have shaped the game in the 21st century more profoundly than anyone else. And their stories are so, so closely intertwined. In the first of two special Ramble Guide 2s, we're exploring the mad, special and mad career of Pep Guardiola.
And he's in again here, Lionel Messi. Could this be the hat-trick before half-time?
He's the man who made modern Barcelona, who steered the most talented footballer of all time through his best years, who assembled maybe the greatest ever club side.
They make it look so simple. Control, pass, backflip, pass. It's frighteningly good.
But he's also the man who has been accused of chronically overthinking to the point of losing his hair and has still failed to win the Champions League since those halcyon days in Catalonia.
Different year, same stuff. Yeah, it's a shame for us to go in that way.
today. We're going to explore his enigmatic brilliance as a manager, man and serial botherer of opposition players. Nathan Redmond knows.
It's not your player. It's nothing to do with you, Pep. Go away.
So sit down, drink water and relax, because this is the Football Ramble's guide to Pep Guardiola. Oh, gentlemen, what a task we have on our hands today. We have to start, chaps, by exploring the idea that Pep Guardiola and Jose Mourinho's careers are entwined together, as we said in the intro. Why are they important as a pair? And why is it, Andy, that we are doing this as a doubleheader? We have to mention them both together.
Yeah, we do. I think partly because they're sort of diametric opposites, and partly because, as you say, they are so fantastically intertwined from Barcelona, back when Guardiola was a player.
From the get-go.
And then, later on, when they both go for the Barcelona job in 2008 and don't get it. And then, when he comes back, Mourinho, to face Guardiola as a fully-fledged member of the Galactic Empire, which is what we love to see. Uh-huh.
And did it before, of course, with Inter in that tumultuous tie in the Champions League. But Vish, the two of them together, I mean, the debates which will rage on for many years, of course, about Messi and Ronaldo, those two are always mentioned in the same bracket. In terms of managers, it's these two, isn't it, in the 21st century, the two most talked about managers in world football.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a luxury, if that is the right word, for us, that we got to enjoy them and whatnot, not just at the same time, but more often than not against each other. Mm. Certainly in their, you know, I say in their respective peaks, I mean Mourinho's peak really, don't yeah. I? Because Pep Guardiola's peak evidently is continuing.
Well, we'll explore that.
Yeah. Well, and I think the thing I find fascinating about both of them is that they have very different styles. If we take success as a given, mm-hmm. They're very different styles. And yet they have the same, a lot of the same results in terms of falling out with players. They approach things in actually very similar ways when you look at how they focus on the environment, how players often don't have very nice things to say about them by the end of their respective tenures at clubs. Mm-hmm. And I think also little things down to how they approach the game in terms of the 90 minutes on the field, in terms of how they look to seek an advantage out of every little thing in the stadium. I don't even mean the pitch, yeah. Whether it's from watering the pitch mm-hmm. to little things like how they've both actually employed ball boys to play a part in what they're doing on the field. I think there's a lot of similarities between both, which is, I realise it's a bit of a cod psychological thing to say, mm. but a lot of the time very similar people are often at each other's throats. And, yeah. and I see a little bit of that in these two.
Mm. Absolutely. Well, we will, of course, get to Mourinho in the next Ramble Guide too, but for now we are going to focus on Guardiola. But of course, there's crossover, as we've just sort of mapped out there for you. And you recently described them as the Gallagher brothers, which it's an imperfect analogy, but it's one that's very, you know, very much close to my own heart.
Who's writing the songs?
Well, I think Guardiola would be Noel and Mourinho would be Liam in that you pretend that Noel is the more important one, but everyone secretly likes Liam more.
Perfect, yeah.
And also, with regards to Mourinho's career, you know, obviously, his time, the first couple of albums, Oasis, you know, he's playing the hits, FC Porto, Inter, you know. But then, when Liam does go back to Nebworth quite recently, winning that European trophy with Roma, it's not what we had before, but it is a little nod to the former glories.
Yeah, Mourinho's never making a high-flying birds record, is he? Guardiola definitely is. Probably on the eve of the Champions League final.
Well, Guardiola is mates with Noel Gallagher as well, apparently, but there we are. We will get to all this and more, of course. So let's start with Guardiola. That's what we're doing today. Guardiola, of course, was a very, very fine player in his day. Now, even as a boy, he was known within his community as a football fanatic. Now I think he's more of a football madhead, isn't he? But fanatic madhead, there's a thin line between the two.
Do you reckon they should have spotted it early and they should have intervened then?
Yeah.
And there.
At 13, he started to lose his head. Well, he started training at Barcelona's famous youth academy, La Masia, but by 16, apparently he hadn't found his sort of specialised position, which of course we would come to know in sort of layman's terms as a defensive midfield role, pulling the strings and all that. And now the legend goes that Johan Cruyff, the great Johan Cruyff, saw him when he was playing for the youth team in 1988
And Cruyff sort of apparently, you know, he randomly decided to watch a youth game. And at halftime, he, as it says, is he demands to know who the player who's playing on the right side of midfield is. Now, you have to remember, everybody, this is the late 80s. But Barcelona, the kind of 4-3-3, the fluid football and all the rest of it, hasn't really... I mean, it would be Cruyff who would could bring that back, really, of course, with the Dream Team, which is why we're mentioning this. But yes, they were there to be shaped and moulded into the Barcelona that we all know and perhaps love. So yes, he suggests that Pep should be moved to the more sort of central defensive midfield position. And of course, he settles in and the rest is history. But Guardiola, not long after that, became a stalwart of Johan Cruyff's Dream Team, of course. And in that 91-92 season, they won their first ever European Cup at Wembley, beating Sampdoria in the final. And Guardiola was a huge part of Johan Cruyff's Dream Team as well. Do you remember him much as a player, Vish?
Yeah, no, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. Because I think he was one of the first players who I really appreciated who didn't necessarily affect things in a headline-y way, if that's the right way of putting it, in terms of goals, mm-hmm. you know, tackles, saves. He was a reader of the game. And I think maybe he was easier to spot in a team like Barcelona mm-hmm. when you knew they're, you know, when they were an incredibly gifted team and...
Surrounded by superstars.
Yeah, and it was evident that he was playing an important role in there. Because he was surrounded by superstars, you were like, right, this guy's clearly mm-hmm. important. Mm-hmm. There's an element of like, probably a bit different in the way that we hype players up, or certainly have in the last 10, 15 years, but someone like Busquets, who you're like, he's clearly incredible at what he does. Yep. And when you're able to focus in on what he does, mm-hmm. which you couldn't really do at the time then, it's easier to see. But then you kind of went on the reputation of those around him and you thought, okay, this guy's clearly got something about him.
I think that idea of a coach on the pitch, which is what he looks like, particularly retrospectively, is very important. The idea that, you know, he's like Cruyff's muse, really, on the field. I think it's interesting as well, when you go forward to the bit where he's Barcelona coach, obviously he believes in bringing players through La Masia and the understanding of what Barcelona mean as a club on and off the pitch. I think it's quite interesting that in that first season, when, and people always peddle this myth, or some people always peddle this myth, that, you know, he inherited this brilliant team and he didn't have to change anything. One of the biggest changes he makes right at the beginning of being Barcelona first team coach is popping in Busquets.
Yes.
Very important.
Can I ask something, just because you've touched on it there and we are talking about his playing career, because of the fact that he came through La Masia, because of the fact that he saw the talent around him and yet they weren't exactly utilising that until he became manager. Do you think him coming in has changed the way we look at that academy and changed even the way that Barcelona hierarchy look at that academy?
Yeah, I think definitely. There's no doubt about that. That idea of Barcelona DNA, mm-hmm. if you like, becomes even more important under Pep. But of course, it's the fact that he's considered as like the... I guess the lineage of Cruyff, he's considered as the next step in the link, isn't he? Yeah,
I think that's
the next link in the chain.
Sorry. Yeah, I think people can sometimes forget that Barcelona's successful history is fairly recent and modern in terms of footballing history. You think about Real Madrid, it goes back to the 50s. Not so with Barcelona. And of course, the makeup of Spain as a country is a very interesting and complex one in of itself. But it is as a manager that I think that so many people know Pep Guardiola now because he is front and centre, absolute headline maker as a manager in the way he wasn't as a player. Very important player, of course, for that team as you've mapped out there. But I think when you talk about Pep Guardiola's career, when we look back on it, whenever he decides to retire, if he ever does, he'll just go on and on, I think. But I think actually you really see that when they used to call him the brains as a player, it was as if that was him kind of tuning up as to what he would do as a manager kind of thing. And so, of course, he becomes Barcelona B manager and then was announced as Frank Rijkaard's successor. And Frank Rijkaard, as you say, Andy, you know, it was a team full of superstars, you know, Ronaldinho and Deco and Eto and Ludovic Julie and all these players, and they won the Champions League. But
thank you for putting Julie in there.
Yeah, he's done well to get there, hasn't he?
He has.
He was a big player. Backhander.
Yeah, he was a big player for them, Andy.
He was.
Philip Christenval as well, yeah.
Mark Van Bommel, was he about? played in the World Cup final. You know, should have been for less minutes than what it was, but there we are. But he took over from Frank Rijkaard, and Frank Rijkaard had brought Barcelona back into being the champions of Europe again. But then they began to slide. So this kind of winning machine that Barcelona kind of sort of became, at least ostensibly for a period of time, until all this financial business in the last sort of couple of years, it was when Guardiola took over. But I think when Rijkaard took over and got them going again, they really, really shone brightly, and then it started to wane. And when Guardiola, in his first season, and you know, we spoke about this recently on a Patreon episode, the changes that he has to make are enormous. And actually, a rot had set in, an inertia had set in for a while, actually, despite Rijkaard's side playing really nice football.
But not by the end of it.
No.
It was a mess.
Yeah.
It was undisciplined.
Mm-hmm.
They finished third to Real Madrid.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at spring 2008, when they've lost the title to Real Madrid, and they have to applaud them onto the pitch, they have to do a guard of honour.
Yeah.
Onto the pitch at the Bernabeu at the beginning of the Clásico,
and
then Real Madrid go on and belt them 4-1. So, and at that point, they know they need a massive reset,
and they want one of their own.
Yes,
because this is the where the Mourinho
they decide on one of their own eventually.
So this is where the Mourinho and Guardiola thing, because Mourinho has won titles at Porto, he's won titles at Chelsea by this point. Jose Mourinho is possibly, in terms of stock, the best football manager on the planet at that point. He is. He gets sacked by Chelsea, of course, but he's just this incredible figure at this point in football. And Barcelona need a manager. Of course, Mourinho was at Barcelona before under Bobby Robson, and knew Guardiola well. You know, there's that incredible moment after they win the Cup Winners' Cup in 1997.
Yeah.
With I think Ronaldo scored the only goal against
PSG.
PSG, and Guardiola points at Mourinho, and they do this lovely big hug on the pitch at the end of the game. So it all seems harmonious between the two, but this is the moment where a schism is created. One of the most incredible and talked about sort of schisms in terms of the effect it had in modern football history, you would say. Barcelona, they want success. They need to get back to the top. Surely Mourinho is the obvious option. He's a winner. He is just gobbling up the trophies. And Mourinho must think to himself, well, I'm going to go back to the club where I was this little coach, and I'm going to show him what for. And of course, Andy, as you say, they choose one of their own, Pep Guardiola, who's had one season managing for Barcelona B.
But it's funny. If you're thinking you want to sort out a mess,
Mourinho doesn't take that very well, by the way.
It's fair to say, as has been discussed at length in the Axel Torres book that followed that, which some have tried to debunk as fiction, and maybe there is a dramatic element to it. It's very entertaining anyway, worth the read. I think the interesting thing is how you would think in a situation like that, if you want to clear deck, Mourinho's your man for that scorched earth policy. But in fact, it's Guardiola who has to bin some quite beloved players. So he's concerned about the influence that Ronaldinho and Deco in particular are having on Messi, so he bins them.
And Ronaldinho is one of the most loved players in that club's history.
Yes, he tries to bin Samuel Eto'o, unsuccessfully it turns out, and that turns out to be quite good, particularly in that first season. So it's sometimes not acknowledged the hard decisions he made. It's a different type of discipline, or maybe less confrontational discipline than Mourinho.
Well, that's right, yeah, because Guardiola, you know, Ibrahimovic, of course, went there just for a season. It didn't quite work out. And he often would get angry because Guardiola, certainly according to Ibrahimovic, would kind of shy away and make his decisions.
Well, he's more a Mourinho guy, isn't he?
He's much more of a Mourinho guy.
Well, the great Ibrahimovic quote, I think it was after the defeat against Inter Milan, where he, you know, goes into the dressing room and says he hasn't got any balls, calls him a coward. And, you know, there's that other quote about how he says that Guardiola bought a Ferrari, talking about himself, bought a Ferrari and he drove it like a Fiat.
Yeah. Both are from Italy.
Yeah, there you go, Zlatan. What a good Swedish car, a Skoda. It's not even a Skoda. But the thing I find interesting about the way players from that era remember working with Guardiola. When Ibrahimovic signed for Manchester United, he did an interview with Sky Sports with Thierry Henry. And Thierry Henry, to stoke the fires, asked him that, you know, Ronaldo, Messi,
yeah.
Pep, or Jose.
And Henry himself having played under Guardiola and won the treble with him.
Yeah. And Ibrahimovic goes, I know why you've asked me that, but you know exactly what my answer is and you agree with me. And Henry just starts laughing.
Ooh.
And like, so you could tell that even someone of that profile, and it's got to be hard when you're at that stage of your career when you think you're doing brilliant things and you have previously done brilliant things at that club, mm-hmm. and someone comes in and says, you know what? No.
Yeah.
Don't need you. And it takes incredible balls to do that.
Well,
actually.
It does. I mean, but the clear out he had in his first season there at Barcelona, you know, what did it change at the club? Because for my money, it seemed to bring a structure, some discipline, and it set Barcelona on the trajectory that they would go off for, well, I don't know how many years you would say.
Well, in the most simple way, it gives them the midfield that they end up leaning on for the next decade.
There you go.
Straight away. That's the most simple way of framing it. But having players who are Barcelona or of Barcelona stock, mm-hmm. like Gerard Piqué, who he brings back and becomes another key figure.
Yeah.
And then you think
of... Lucille from United, that?
Yeah. And then you think of the importance of Xavi, Iniesta, Puyol,
mm-hmm.
later Pedro, for example.
Yeah.
All of those, it all feeds into him... having a Barcelona where everyone understands what Barcelona is about.
Well, totally. Yeah. And they, of course, win the treble in his first season. Stunning stuff. His best season in management is his first season. The Noel Gallagher's analogy could come back into play. and I say that's a huge Noel Gallagher fan. But he made those decisions and they reaped immediate rewards. Although, for the first two games of the season, they struggled and there was talks for, hey, this guy's not cut out. Mm. You think, what on earth are we doing here? And Johan Cruyff steps in and goes, no, I saw them. There's great improvement. And then they win the third game, 6-1, and then they're away. And of course, they have that unbelievable season. And the trophies would follow. I mean, they beat Manchester United in the final that year, 2-0, when it was genuinely the two best sides in Europe in that final. Mm. I don't think anybody would have any kind of problem arguing that. And the way Barcelona took them apart, it was just like, I mean, I was lucky enough to be at the final in Rome. And I remember coming away just going, you've witnessed greatness.
I mean, he even made Messi score against an English club. That's how good he was.
Well, to squeeze, he managed to get a tune out of Messi. I think we will all remember him for that.
Ronaldinho tried, Deco tried. He said it couldn't be done.
He was just tuning up with those ones, you know. And then,
come on,
and then,
drink up, it'll be fine.
So the one thing I think about that season in particular,
mm-hmm.
and I maybe I'm over-egging pudding here on this, but a lot of the way that people talk about Guardiola now is the tactical and analytical side, almost devoid of emotion, almost conditioning people to learn new instincts, as it were, to not be too emotional on the field, to believe in the fact that you don't, if you're searching for a goal in the last 5 minutes, you should do exactly what we've been doing for
plan B, essentially.
40 games. Yeah, have unequivocal belief in that plan, that plan A. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I think he does early on in Barcelona is, well, two things really. The best thing you can do with young precocious players is give them responsibility. He gave them responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I think the way I saw that Barcelona team start out, they were basically playing like a country.
Yeah.
They were playing, that was their bread and butter. Spain was almost an afterthought, which is hilarious when you think about what Spain won during that period as
totally,
well.
Totally, yeah. Well, there's not a huge coincidence.
No, exactly. And I think it maybe showed itself in a more political way later on when we started talking about independence for Catalonia.
Mm.
And you suddenly see that side to him and you're like, right, okay, I think I get this now.
Yeah.
Because I'm not too au fait with political and the geopolitical issues in Spain. But evidently it was something that he truly believed in. Yeah. Bear in mind, he ended up playing a few games for Catalonia as well, didn't he, during his playing days?
Yeah.
And I think that's the most emotional and most impressive I've seen him on anything other than football, really.
Right.
Because I thought he spoke so passionately and yet sensibly about what is an issue that was blowing up in Spain.
Yeah.
All the way from, all the way in Manchester. And I wonder if that was part of that. I wonder if it was almost getting the people together and being like, look, we are different. We need to be different. We need to be ourselves. Because it's, you know, stood the test of time, really.
Indeed it has, yeah. And he totally gets, I mean, it is the epitome of one of our own. You know, I don't know if they sing that
exactly,
we do here. Not about Pep, of course. But yes, yeah, so, unbelievable success. And he turned Barcelona into a side, which I've said before, they felt like almost like they were the good guys of football. Again, whether that's true or not, I mean, it probably isn't, but that's what it felt like. Suddenly, wherever you went in the world, I went to a couple of far-flung away places. Everyone's wearing Barcelona kits. It was incredible. Barcelona became everybody's, if they're not your first team, they're your second team.
Well, do you remember the great Jose Mourinho quote about when he thought the referees were more lenient on Barcelona
yeah.
because they were sponsored by UNICEF?
Right. Because
he was like, they were playing, because totally. I think that was when they broke their no sponsor thing, wasn't it?
Fortunately, it was completely altruistic and didn't turn out to be a bridge to anything else.
Well, exactly, but they were almost playing up to it, weren't they?
Yeah.
And his idea that got in his head, they're like, no, it's because they're sponsored by UNICEF that they were giving them a penalty.
Exactly, but the UNICEF on the jersey, they were winning trophies. They had this amazing team, and they had Lionel Messi, who became the global superstar under Pep Guardiola. And you know, those two were just, it was incredible to see them working together. Pep on the sidelines, of course, Messi on the pitch. But then 2015, Messi said they no longer have any kind of relationship, which is a shame. But Andy, talk about those two.
I don't think it's surprising, though, is it?
Well, yeah.
Because the intensity with which Guardiola worked, I mean, I'd like to briefly touch on, well, I guess where we'll go later. When he left Bayern, there's this collective, God, that was intense, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, Thomas Müller and Manuel Neuer are going, well, the team's not being trained hard enough by Ancelotti. And they're organising their own training sessions off the books.
Yeah.
So you maybe miss it once it's... And they spend so long looking for the right coach after he's left Barcelona. So,
but I think that's the incredible thing, that he stayed at Man City.
Recapturing that magic is difficult.
But staying at Man City that long, that's been an intriguing one, because at Guardiola, it seemed to be he would be the coach for... perhaps similar, perhaps different reasons of that of Mourinho, that it would be three-season stuff.
No, but I think the difference...
The
difference is all in Manchester City's planning. Because for years before, they set the table with Begiristain, all those guys to basically do the management stuff for him. So the difference between what you're saying as coach and manager is very important. At Manchester City... he's just the coach.
Yeah.
And post-Barcelona, that's what he rediscovers. But Barcelona's so exhausting and all-consuming because he is basically the manager, the guy who sets the philosophy, the guy who blows the trumpet for Catalunya and is like the front-facing figure of the club. He doesn't have the same level of support, and he's expected to be everything and do everything. And this relationship with Messi is kind of at the part of it, to such... bastions of Barcelona.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, I think if Guardiola hadn't moved on, I mean, look, Messi's talent, he was always going to get to the top and stay there for a long, long time. But I think it is probably for the best for everybody that Guardiola did move on, because Messi clearly wanted a bit more control. Guardiola likes to have kind of total control, if you like. And they were kind of butting heads. I mean, by the 2011-12 season, it kind of reached breaking point. Messi was rested for a league game against Real Sociedad. He skipped training the next day, which is something that you wouldn't think.
I thought you were going to talk about the can of Coke, but anyway, go on.
What was the can of Coke?
We
had a can of Coke and he got told off for it, was that?
Yeah, the team meeting. Yeah,
and very naughty. What did he eat?
Schoolboy stuff. Literally schoolboy stuff.
Don't have it in the team meeting.
He drank a can of Coke in the team meeting. Guardiola, what, gave him lines? What happened?
Yeah,
he just leaned over and dropped a Mento in it. Drink that. You little weasel.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because...
But make the point about he skipped training and then Pep subsequently played Messi in every minute of every game he was available for the rest of the season.
That's so... he made him smoke the whole pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, but in this analogy, that pack of cigarettes is 73 goals that season, though. So,
cigarettes are cool, yeah.
cigarettes mean trophies. No. So, scored a lot of goals. Some suggest maybe... the team wasn't better off for that.
But that's the thing, isn't it? Because throughout all of it, whether Messi can see it or not, Guardiola does everything for him. Against his instincts, he brings in Ibrahimovic because he thinks he's technically better than Eto, so therefore will link better with Messi. That doesn't quite work. Messi needs to go into the centre, and he feels that Ibrahimovic, being relatively immobile compared to other Barcelona players, takes up that space for him in the middle. So then, a horrendous financial loss. They clear at the decks, and then they have, for 2011, probably their best ever front three in Pedro, Messi, and David Villa, where there's no real fixed point.
But again, that's the Guardiola. You know, in this country, we talk about Alex Ferguson breaking up good teams and then shaping them all. Guardiola, in four seasons at Barcelona, manages to, you know, Thierry Henry, Samuel Eto'o, and Lionel Messi was an incredible front three, won the treble. And he's got a slightly different lineup the next season and all this kind of stuff. And in that, I think that is the peak of his powers. Guardiola, you know, the tiki-taka was a phrase sort of kind of coined. I know he didn't particularly like that. But again, he's changing football at this time. You know, the 2011 Champions League final, was it at Wembley when they beat Manchester United 3-1? That looks to me...
That's an apex Champions League final performance.
Well, you could
almost as good as Milan beating Barcelona in 94.
You could make an argument that it was better in terms of tactically. You know, Guardiola created one of, if not the best club side in the world. That performance in a Champions League final, he showed it to the world. Like, this was Guardiola. And the thing is, from there, where do you go in your career? This is what I mean. Like, it's so... And of course, Guardiola, the following season, is exhausted and has to leave Barcelona. And maybe one of the things with Manchester City, and of course it's not the political stuff that you've mentioned earlier, Vish, it's not his hometown, so it's not going to be as all consuming.
He's not required to be a symbol of the club in the same way.
Well, I mean, look, yeah, I mean, Mourinho once said of Guardiola, when you enjoy what you do, you don't lose your hair. And Guardiola is bald. He doesn't enjoy football. Now, I mean...
But that, that could have been written by us. it's that PC.
But it wasn't, but though, was it?
It's not just the football at Barcelona. He has to do everything.
Of course. Yeah. And that was the thing with his time there. He was utterly exhausted.
Did he also have to keep the accounts?
Well, if he did...
Look, as long as someone else does this when I leave,
but I wonder,
he should
though,
be fine.
But, I mean,
it is interesting how he, just like Mourinho, he walks away after this great success. There's a trail of financial chaos.
Yeah, well, but I mean, but mentioning Mourinho, here he comes again, because Mourinho joins Real Madrid. You know, Barcelona are on top of the world. The world has fallen in love with them. And Real Madrid are sitting there going, hang about, like, we can't have any of this. Not even for a moment. So their move is to play what they consider an ace card in the form of hiring Jose Mourinho as manager.
But also, when Real Madrid hire Mourinho, they're saying, we're never going to match Barcelona for style.
Yeah.
Let's just fuck them.
Do you think, though? Because I think Mourinho thought, right, we're going to make it into... Because there was that period, wasn't there? In 18 days, we had four Clásicos. And I tell you what, I was exhausted.
Yes.
After that. It was. Have you ever experienced anything quite like that in football, Vish? Here it was.
It's like a World Series, basically.
It was.
Isn't it?
Yeah, like, it was just condensed. As I say, it would be a bit like Ronaldo and Messi having a penalty shootout where they both get five, you know, they're the only ones taking, and they, you know, it was like a competition.
If they did it for 18 days.
Exactly.
there's also the thing where none of those games gave you even the most hint of an opportunity, a League Cup fifth round of an opportunity to rest players.
Yeah, absolutely.
You just had to go 100% every single game.
And clearly, because there was that great performance when Barcelona beat Real Madrid 5-0 at the Nou Camp, and they were all chanting. The Barcelona fans were chanting at Mourinho because they call him the translator, don't they? Because he was Bobby Robson's translator. And I think he sat there that evening and was just like, right, okay, like, that is it. And you know that the man loves a vendetta. And you could argue Mourinho's whole career is a vendetta against Barcelona from that point where they decided to. But those Clásicos in 2011, it was something else. But after Real Madrid won the 2011 Copa del Rey final against Barcelona, which was the first sort of chink in the armour of Barcelona in terms of the Clásicos, because it felt like... It almost felt like New Labour. They're going to win every election. Do you know what I mean? Like, Barcelona are going to beat them every single time. There is not going to be a moment. And of course, and Ronaldo's involved as well. So they get Cristiano Ronaldo. So he comes into the mix. It's all there. But after Real Madrid won that final, Pep went out in his pre-match press conference before the Champions League semi-final and said down the camera, in this room, Mourinho is the fucking chief, the fucking boss. I don't want to compete with him in here. This is a game of football.
It's the way he says that.
Yeah.
It's like he's a beautifully sculpted football robot who's having a short circuit.
Yeah,
he's absolutely losing it. And Mourinho must have been watching that, laughing his ass off.
He did, yeah.
Because he thinks, I've got him here. I've got under his skin in a way that I couldn't even have hoped was possible.
Yeah.
So, I also think there's an element of Mourinho realises he's in his head, and then very quickly, certainly over the next few years, and I include when he's come, when they're both going at it in England.
Yeah.
I think he realises it's not a nice place for someone else to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Genuinely, because he's just wired differently.
Yeah, totally. And I think you know, as you mentioned earlier, Andy, they both exhausted themselves so much in that period of time. And Pep, of course, leaves Barcelona in 2012 and needs to take a break to drink water and relax, presumably in New York.
Well, it's definitely not wine. It's definitely water.
But with regards
also, to... Also, bear in mind, during that time off in New York, he came across a pickup game and decided to do some coaching.
But he loves it. He's an absolute football pervert.
Is that before or after chess with Garry Kasparov?
Oh, yeah, there was that as well. Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that. But yes, and then at Bayern Munich, you've already mentioned it, of course. How is he remembered at Bayern? Because he took over when they just themselves won the treble.
Yeah. But I think this goes to show, when we look at the fact that Guardiola hasn't won the Champions League since 2011, it shows how judging football just in terms of trophies or just in terms of numbers is essentially flawed. Because if you ask match-going Bayern fans, people will always throw it in his face that he didn't win the Champions League at Bayern. But if you ask match-going Bayern fans, what was Bayern's Guardiola like? They will say the best football we ever saw.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
The influence he's had on the Premier League since he came here has been extraordinary. And I would say, I mean, he obviously goes back to his Barcelona days, but even playing grassroots football, just the way teams now operate, you can see it. Like at our level, I've seen the changes myself. Now, I know football has...
Seeing Sunday League teams do the rondo.
Yes, well, no, but like passing out from the back. Yeah. And it's not just passing out the back. I know teams have been doing that for years and so on. But his impact on football, you cannot underestimate. And it's been incredible having him in the Premier League. He took a little while to get going here, much to the amusement of some sort of journalists and whatnot, and, you know, a bald fraud, people were, you know, were calling him and all this kind of stuff, forgetting what he'd done. But I find it interesting with what he's done at Man City, because I don't think it will ever be thought of as what he did at Barcelona, because I think people just go, yeah, but look at the budget. Look at the budget you've got, you know, and you haven't won the Champions League. The fact is, you've only reached one final since 2011, which is incredible. And all this kind of overthinking things when they have reached the latter stages, Man City, especially in that final against Chelsea. But he now has a reputation, Andy, of overthinking the big games.
That's being an innovator for you, isn't it?
But you try
and adjust all the time.
Yeah.
You're not an innovator at the highest level of football without taking some risks.
Do you think it's
always done that. I think the other thing as well.
No, but do you think he's an innovator, or do you think he's desperately trying to find what made it all happen at Barcelona?
No, I don't. I don't think it is. Okay. Also, I think the thing before we go on is to say the Champions League is a cup competition.
Okay.
Often the best team don't win it.
Yeah. That's why cup competitions.
Not that he hasn't made mistakes.
But that's why cup competitions exist as well as league formats.
Yeah, yeah.
To add a point of difference.
Mm. Yeah, no, that is a fair point.
The other thing I will say on that is there's a phrase in the art history world, specifically around conservation, that better is the enemy of good.
Mm.
And I think people apply that to football way too much.
Yeah.
Because actually you don't move the game forward if you're not always looking for better.
Mm. Yeah.
And so as Andy said, you know, it's easy for us to look at that final against Chelsea, see Gundogan as the holding midfielder and think, this man has lost his marbles. Mm-hmm. And at the same time realise that Chelsea are there with no intention of keeping the ball.
Yeah.
And him thinking, right, if we're going to see more of the ball, then I'm going to put an extra pass in there.
Sure.
Which makes sense, doesn't it?
And if they win
the game, it makes even more sense. And he's a genius.
The thing is, I'm sure we'll come onto this in our Mourinho part, but actually the reason why, as referencing what Vish was saying at the beginning, the reason Guardiola's peak is longer than Mourinho's is because he adapts to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Is Bayern a complete replication of what he does at Barcelona? No. It takes the best of Bayern and the best qualities of the players that he has and the best qualities of the best German players that are produced and combines them with his philosophy at Barcelona. And he does that at Manchester City as well. You know, at the start when he says, I think it's after the Leicester defeat in his first season at Manchester City. Mm-hmm. And he talks about tackling as being a last resort.
Yeah.
And he's absolutely lampooned for that.
Mm-hmm.
But really, tackling should be a last resort, shouldn't it? Because ideally, you've got the ball all the time.
Yeah.
And you're going to score and score and score and win and win and win.
Well, I think, yeah, the different footballing cultures. I mean, he did say after, I think it was maybe after the heavy defeat to Everton around that time. And he admitted he got things wrong. And he said, well, that's why I came here, to be changed.
Yeah,
which is a very interesting way of putting it, and quite humble actually.
Yeah, yeah. I think just because it was triggered by something Andy said there about using the best of the German players, he has access to, and we've seen it a little bit with English players at Manchester City. One of my favourite qualities, if not the favourite quality of Guardiola's that I adore, is his ability to look at a player.
Mm-hmm.
And put them in a position, not be told what position they're in.
Philipp Lahm?
Philipp Lahm is the best example of that. Mm-hmm. The idea that this guy is an exceptional world-class right and left back, essentially, and he looks at him and thinks, you'll be a gun defensive midfielder.
But even for the greatest, it doesn't always work. And I think that's the thing. He can be brilliant and he can be a genius and he's still going to make mistakes because everyone makes mistakes. It's like, well, you talked about that. What made me think of it is when he tries to make Ribery into a number 10 from a left winger and he tries and he tries and he tries and Ribery just does not get it and he has to give up in the end.
But he's such an amenable character, Ribery.
But I mean, there are some examples, you're right. I mean, Sergio Aguero, probably one of the greatest strikers in the Premier League's history, didn't quite click with Guardiola.
But then look what Gabriel Jesus was doing for Arsenal you know what, and it's funny, I think, you know, the Jesus thing's interesting because he bought him as his player, clearly wanted him to do more than just be a number nine. Gabriel Jesus wasn't totally into that, found himself, you know, playing right wing and essentially doing doggies, which he didn't really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, actually, if you look at what he was doing successfully in the first half of the season for Arsenal, I mean, Guardiola's paw prints are all over that.
Yes, yes, they are. They are.
Yeah, they're very true. But then look what he's done with Kevin De Bruyne. Now, I know De Bruyne was a superb player beforehand, but he's made him probably one of, if not the best midfielders of his generation, you could argue. But I mean, it is interesting because Guardiola, you know, we've talked about it tactically, but he is also, his man management style, players seem to, I mean, you said earlier that when players finish playing for him, you know, maybe they are exhausted and maybe don't say too kind things and so on, but clearly a lot of them love him when they're playing for him.
Well, it's the ultimate...
I mean, look at those celebrations when he's got a cigar on and singing Don't Look Back in Anger and so on. There is a side to Guardiola which seems very affable, very sociable, which I wouldn't have thought, because I think of him almost as like a mad scientist, that he would be like Bielsa.
You wouldn't see Bielsa doing something like that.
He's different
to, say, Tuchel. Because I think, like, for example, Tuchel is very clear with players and very demanding with players. But I guess the thing with Guardiola, when you talk about that sociability... Mm-hmm. He's always believed in the collective. He got Messi to buy into the collective. When we're going back to the Coke can, it's all about submitting to the collective, even if you're the best. And he gets everyone to do that. But over time, it gets easier for him to do that because it's the ultimate mark of respect for a player to say, Pep Guardiola wants me. Pep Guardiola considers me important. Yep. He considers me as important as all the other players because we're all important and he considers me to be part of it.
So a great example of a great example of what Andy's talking about there in terms of Guardiola getting everyone to buy into the whole. I know a few people who work behind the scenes at Man City on their social media side, and they said they've never been at a club where the best players are so easy to approach about little like videos on Instagram, you know, social content around Christmas or Halloween, because there's a sense of like, oh, well, everyone, this is what we're supposed to do. We're doing it for the club, aren't we? We're doing it to raise the club's profile. This is just, you've asked me to do something. You work for the club. I work for the club. Let's do this together. And yeah, they I'm not going to name names, but they would name like previous players who were like, why does this guy have an attitude? Why does so-and-so think he's better than this? And yet, you know, Ballon d'Or contenders like, I'll act like a dickhead. And I'll walk through this hall so Kyle Walker can jump out in a hockey mask and scare me. Like, that's quite rare. That comes from the top, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it's unusual to be at a club with Guardiola and not be most scared of him, really, isn't it?
He should jump out with a Guardiola mask, shouldn't he?
I mean, that's the other joy of collectivity, isn't it? The fact that you don't want to be singled out by Guardiola. You don't want him to be half a centimetre from your face, grabbing your chops and, you know, talking you through your next game like Redmond or Kimmich.
Manchester City and Liverpool have had this incredible rivalry. And huge credit goes to Liverpool and Klopp, of course, for keeping up with them. Because, again, you look at the budgets and so on and so forth. But do you think there's any question now whether this Man City team is the best Premier League team ever? Do you think they are, Vish?
I think, or Andy? I think there's a question, but there's a very good argument for it. Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing about the rivalry, if you want to call it that, between City and Liverpool, is how little off-pitch chip there is. Like, we as Premier League fans like a rivalry. For me, the most satisfying rivalry,
Man United Arsenal.
It's comfortably.
Yeah, because Wenger and Ferguson hated each other. But the funny thing is,
but it's the players as well.
But do you know
what
though?
This is just based on the quality of the football. There's no real other element.
Well, because that is Guardiola. I think that he, unless he is massively provoked by Mourinho, and of course, remember, Manchester United brought in Mourinho, which I think them themselves are trying to do a Real Madrid there, and it didn't quite work out. I think Guardiola does look at Jurgen Klopp and admire his football, and he does relish that kind of challenge. You know,
are Man City the best Premier League side? My impulse is to say no,
right?
Because
you're a Manchester United fan.
Well, and because of those Manchester United teams of the late 90s into early 2000s. In terms of the football, though, in terms of how they've carried forward, I think they've had some of the best players, and that's not to discredit Guardiola. I think Guardiola's part of that. I think they've had some of the best players, best performances in the Premier League era.
Do you think
the issue actually when discussing Man City as a team is they've had so many changing parts.
Sure.
It's hard to kind of nail down a 15.
But do you think with Manchester City, though, and with Guardiola's football in general, there was perhaps an element of it crept in at Barcelona, and maybe that's the same with City. There is a feeling, certainly with that Barcelona side, that he'd found the cheat code, that this is how you play the game, and if you play it like this, you cannot lose, and this is the purest way of playing. Now, of course, that's not true. There's 101 ways to win a football match. But do you think there's an element that people get a little bit bored of it?
Yeah, I think that. And also, I think that it's about their collective strength, really. The fact that if you're thinking of the best teams, you're thinking of the biggest players, the most outstanding players. Everyone who plays for City is so good. But before, it was Aguero and the others. And that wasn't the case once Guardiola took over. One of the best things that Guardiola did was make them less reliant on Aguero because it feeds into his vision of football, because you have this complete balance between all the players that you had at Bayern and that you had at Barcelona as well. It goes back to when Franck Ribéry didn't win the Ballon d'Or in 2013, because Bayern almost split the vote because they're collectively so good, and that's what he does.
I would also say that one of the things that Guardiola has become quite annoyed about at Man City is what we said about people getting a bit bored of it, is the atmosphere the Etihad. He's often laid into Manchester City home fans for not creating, you know, grand enough noise, for not spurring the team on, because he's basically cultivated a level of expectancy there.
Yeah, completely. Still hasn't won the Champions League, though. And as I say, I think his legacy, you know, when all said and done, I think it will be in that season at Barcelona, and obviously what he went on to do at Bayern and Man City we mentioned. But it was when he looked like he had created a side that was completely and utterly invincible. But there seemed to be two men who seems to who can dent that and can shatter that, whether it be for a season, a moment, a cup game, or whatever. And Jurgen Klopp, of course, is one of them, and the other is Jose Mourinho. Maybe not nowadays, but certainly back in the day it was. So, yes, let's leave it there. So we've done Guardiola. On the next one, it will be Jose Mourinho, of course. Thank you very much for joining us on another Football Ramble Guide 2. Remember, we want your ideas for what to talk about. Email us, show@footballramble.com, or tweet us @footballramble with your suggestions. But of course, next time it will be Jose Mourinho, the fallen angel of FC Barcelona, as Jonathan Wilson once described him. Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vish.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. See you soon for the next one.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.